For more information on ancient dragon Zengate and Taigen's teachings, please visit our website at www.ancientdragon.org. Our teachings are offered to the community through the generosity of our supporters. To make a donation online, please click on the link for Just Give on our website.
Good evening, everyone. Today is the winter solstice. It's the shortest, darkest day of the year. The good news is that starting tomorrow, the days get longer, the light increases, warmth is coming. And so to lead us into the light tonight, I'm very happy that we have Katie Lutzik giving the talk. She's our assistant Tenzo and Doan extraordinaire. And, so thank you, Katie, for giving the talk tonight.
Thank you, everyone, for being here and for constantly encouraging my practice. It's wonderful to sit Zazen with all of you tonight. And thank you to my teacher, Taigen, for giving me this opportunity to speak. Let's talk about winter just for a second. It has nothing to do with my talk, but I have to talk about it anyways. I've got a couple of haikus. From Mitsui Suzuki, Suzuki Roshi's wife. So I tried to narrow it down to a short amount, but it's not possible. So I'll go quickly. Roasting sesame seeds, one pops out. Warm winter. Winter buds, subtle but certain. Distant mist. Dialogue of bells entering into winter, Dokusan. Leisurely bath, playing with the baby, winter solstice. And I'll that. So, thanks for letting me share haiku. I like to read haikus per the season, and as Taigen mentioned, it is officially winter, I suppose, although it's insanely warm outside. But that's a whole nother story. So, I'm actually wanting to talk about food tonight. I've been thinking a lot about food lately. Well, I always think about food. It's a big part of my day, but I recently started a job at a food pantry, so that makes me think about food even more. And as Taigen mentioned, I am assistant Tenzo, which doesn't really, it has not that much to do with, I don't spend that much time doing assistant Tenzo, but still, I'll talk about it briefly. And then also, I think there's just a lot of fun things to talk about with food. But it's also just like, what was I thinking talking about food? Because there's so much to talk about. It's such a huge, huge topic. So I'm also just going to talk about my practice lately and my patterns and you know, my sometimes flawed understanding of concepts that will come up tonight. So it's nice to have this opportunity to talk. It's not something that I would normally want to do. I'm certainly sometimes insecure and uncertain, and I don't have it all figured out. But Zazen really helps me look at myself and come to a more realistic relationship with self, and hopefully one that is more beneficial to myself and to the world. So, just when I first started thinking about this talk, I was like, what am I gonna? What about food? There's so much to it. You know, food reminds me of ceremony and hospitality and celebration and tradition and relationships and gratitude and celebration and hard work and interconnection but also inequality and consumption and overconsumption and food waste. And so it was hard to, I wanted to talk about all these things, but I could like I'll probably say a million times tonight, it's any of these things could be a whole talk, but I'm just going to kind of babble on about different stories that remind me of food and come to some other conclusions, I'm sure. One of my favorite stories about food is a couple years ago, I lived in Minneapolis and I ran an after-school program, mostly with East African youth, and it was a ton of fun. We went on like really fun field trips. It was just totally unstructured, fun. We mostly just walked around the neighborhood that we were living in, and I remember one day we were walking around and the kids started picking berries. I'm like, what are you guys doing? Don't pick that. I don't know what you're eating. I don't want you to poison yourself. I have no idea what that is. I don't know anything about these berries. And it was just like a really great teaching moment where they're like, it's a mulberry, Katie. What are you talking about? We eat these every day. Like, this is, they grow everywhere in the city. Why do you not know what a mulberry is? What is wrong with you? And just that simple moment of just learning that in the neighborhood that we lived in, there was a lot of opportunity for enjoying nature and consuming nature. And I don't know, there's something about that moment. As soon as I moved back to Chicago, I was to kind of hold on to that gratitude I felt for the kids and for our time together. I immediately started trying to find all the mulberry trees in Chicago, and I made a Google map of all the mulberry trees I could find. And I still, every time I see a mulberry tree, I think about you know, our time that we spent together and how meaningful it was. Another short story, my previous job, I had the opportunity to, every Monday, I would eat lunch with one of my coworkers, and we only saw each other on Mondays because she worked part-time and we had a lot of offices, so she was kind of out and about. And just every Monday, it was a tradition. No matter what I was doing on Sunday, I'd have to make a home-cooked meal. We both make home-cooked meals on Sunday, bring them in and share and just talk about our lives together for that 45 minutes every Monday. And it was just like this very strict tradition. If you forgot to bring your meal, then you look like a fool. And then you had we'd always bring an abundance, so it wouldn't be that big of a deal. But it was just like this sort of gift that we gave to each other of our time and our cultures and of the food that we made with each other. And it's a tradition I miss very much now, and something that we still bond over. We still once in a while will text on Monday, like, what did you make for lunch and what are you eating? Food has a lot of meanings. I was reading an article recently, I think it was in Vice, about food in prison, which I'll try to talk about all the positive things about that if I can find anything positive. I mean, it's a difficult topic. I think I wish that I could say that our justice system was based on reconciliation, reparations, rather than vengeance and retribution. But the positive thing I took from this article was apparently there's this big movement for having people do DIY prison recipes and share them amongst each other, and kind of trying to make them gourmet and being extremely creative with the commissary and just making whatever you can out of that, whatever that might be. And it seems to be really about nothing to do with taste at all, but a reminder of our humanity and community and the person that people were when they're not in this horrible system. And it seems like in Denmark, it makes inmates even have the opportunity to make their food on a regular basis according to their taste and whatever they feel like making. And it seems to clearly correlate to better behavior and greater self-esteem, and just the idea of having control of one single thing in their environment rather than where everything else is just constantly being decided for them. And I wanted to talk briefly about food and my current position at work, which is a lot to do with sharing the wealth that is in our community and trying not to waste food and sort of building community in the neighborhood if we get
donation is something that we can't use, we try to build relationships with other people so that we can share that food and have it not go to waste. And there's a lot of generous people who donate to the agency I work for, and it's interesting to see that relationship. But I think within the work that I do, I also think about the power that I have, and the sort of privilege that I have as well. And I wanted to read a quote from Katagiri Roshi. It's just a little bit over a paragraph. So he said, this is in one of his talks, "Whatever sport, art, or profession we follow, we always go in the direction of using our individual talent and compatibility to accomplish our individual purpose, with the goal of satisfying our individual desire. This is the usual way of life. But people who seek a spiritual way of life always go in the direction of wanting to save all sentient beings, not just satisfy individual desire. So a Buddha's or a Bodhisattva's way of life is completely different from the usual way. It's different from sports or the arts because there's no accomplishment to show others what you have done. Even if you get a result, you have to let it go. You have to completely offer your body, your mind, and your whole life to the universe. That's pretty hard. Usually we have a purpose for giving. We want to give something to somebody who will give us something in return. Or we do something for the sake of success in our careers or for the development of our personalities. But spiritual life is not done for a particular purpose. It's huge. Zen practice is just to open the heart and be intimate with the truth. It's very vague. You don't understand it. But finally, if we do something successfully, we have to give it back to all sentient beings. That is the Bodhisattva's vow." This is tricky for me. I spend a lot of time thinking about it in my practice, and it's really difficult to not be attached to the results and to not be attached to the gift itself. I'll touch upon that a little bit more. So I wanted to also talk about the mule chant that we recite during sesshin and during Oryoki. And also talk about Dogen's dharma for taking meals. Taigen, how do you say that word?
Fushiku Hanpo.
Thank you. That's exactly the word I was looking for. So there's a lot here, and I'm notorious for oversimplifying things. So I highly recommend, if you want to do some more reading and studying, to do that on your own with these texts that I'm talking about, just kind of touching on them, things that I've been thinking about lately. So I've been stealing this book from the library for the past year or so, maybe. Where did my bookmark go? Living by Vow. And there's a nice section of the meal chant, as well as touching upon the dharma for taking meals. So this is just a small part from Dogen. "A sutra says, if you can remain the same with food, all dharmas also remain the same. If all dharmas are the same, then also with food you will remain the same. Just let dharma be the same as food, and let food be the same as dharma. For this reason, if dharmas are the dharma nature, then food also is the dharma nature. If the dharma is suchness, food also is suchness. If the dharma is a single mind, food also is the single mind. If the dharma is bodhi, food also is bodhi. They are named the same, and their significance is the same, so it is said that they are the same. A sutra says, name the same and significance the same, each and every one is the same, consistent with nothing extra. If the Dharma realm is established, everything is entirely Dharma realm. If suchness is established, everything is entirely suchness." I'm just going to skip ahead a little bit. Awakening to the true sameness is the ultimate identity from beginning to end. The suchness of the ultimate identity from beginning to end is the genuine form of all dharmas, which only a Buddha together with a Buddha can exhaustively penetrate. Therefore, food is the Dharma of all dharmas, which only a Buddha together with a Buddha can exhaustively penetrate. For this reason, Dharma is itself food, food is itself Dharma. This Dharma is what is received and used by all Buddhas in the past and future. This food is the fulfillment that is the joy of Dharma and the delight of meditation. If anyone wants to open up, the meal chant is on page 32 of your chant books. I don't want to read too much of that now. Just talk a little bit about it. This is also sort of a struggle for me, and has been, the idea that activities in my daily life, everything that I do is a manifestation of Zazen. I think I've really struggled with that, and in all sort of small instances in my life held me back a little bit. Everything kind of seemed to be a chore to me. It was sort of like an item I can check off a list, instead of sort of being grateful for each moment. But I think with practice, I've sort of realized that everything that I do, I do the dishes, I have to go run out to the store, get toilet paper, everything is it. This is it. If I need to go clean my bike because it's been raining the last couple days, and my bike's just a filthy, disgusting, just chunky, muddy, everything. I have to clean my. I mean, I'm going to clean my bike, and it's going to be a good. It's going to be a good experience. It's really hard to maintain the same attitude towards everything. It's a constant struggle for me, and same with food. My first sentence was, pass the Cheetos, please. So some of you would argue that's not food, Cheetos, but to me, it's very important. Cheetos were just as good as a gourmet meal to me, and to see that, to maintain that same attitude towards food that is expensive or inexpensive or delicious or disgusting or inedible, one might say. It's a constant practice for me, but a fun one as well. I think there's parts of the meal chant that talk about recognizing sort of where our food comes from. I think I've certainly forgotten, or maybe I never really realized where my food comes from and the effort that it takes to get to me and how separate I feel from the process, and not recognizing that food is a gift and that a lot of things have to come in play for me to get the food that I get from the farmer, the oxygen, the weather, the roads, the trucks, all of that. I think there's also sort of a difficulty of I like to eat to satisfy a lot of things. Boredom, hunger. Sometimes I feel like I just do it because I like to feel the chewing movements. It's just like this weird habit that I need to do every day sometimes, even when I'm not even hungry. My favorite part of the meal chant is talking about giver, receiver, and gift. There's a lot there for me about compassion and vulnerability. To be a receiver of a gift, I think there's a lot of vulnerability there, and it's really difficult sometimes for me to express that vulnerability and to think, oh, okay, I can't. There's so many instances of when I receive things when sometimes I just want to push it away. I think there's just a question of how do we practice giving? How do we practice that knowing that we have, or knowing that I have power and privilege and wealth, and what are the ways that I'm complicit, and how do I practice with that? How do I see that and not turn away from that? I think there's also something about abstaining from harm with that too, like how my actions impact other people. How does the fact that I live in a place where I don't live in a food desert, how does that impact other people? And what, you know, what kind of power do I have in that? And there's so much work that needs to be done. And I think the work that I do is really about may all beings be equally nourished, which is in the meal chant, right? And that is complicated. I mean, to recognize the injustices in our society and the systems in place that create this inequality. And what can we do about that? Sometimes I feel like what I do is just sort of putting a band-aid on the situation, which is frustrating. But again, I think it's part of practice and something where I need to be patient with. So I wanted to also just briefly touch upon Assistant Tenzo and what that means to me and in terms of food and food as a teaching. And I really think that for me it's just about making mistakes, making a lot of mistakes. I'm just maybe noticing them more. When you're doing something for a crowd, you just notice the small things that you do. Or when you're serving meals during sesshin, like, no matter what, you just go over the rule, all the things we should be doing, and then inevitably something silly happens, and I forget what's going on. Like, the other day, I decided that I want fall and winter to be like my practice of baking. I want it to be a baking season. So I'm not a really good baker, so I want to practice that. And I was making cookies, and I forgot what an egg white was versus egg yolk. Like, just like some really basic thing. And so I just put the whole egg in. And everything turned out fine. But sometimes, like, you just forget what's going on, I guess. And it's so interesting to practice with mistakes, to be patient with myself. And I wanted to read a little bit of Thich Nhat Hanh about serving food. In this food, I see clearly the presence of the entire universe supporting my existence. This plate of food, so fragrant and appetizing, also contains much suffering. And then there's also something that I think because I was raised Catholic, I was always saying grace before meals, so like the meal chant is just even more meaningful for me. Just that ritual is so exciting to me of like contemplating what's going on before I do it. So I'll also read the five contemplations for eating that Thich Nhat Hanh is famous for. This food is a gift from the earth, the sky, the universe, numerous living beings, and much hard work. May we eat with mindfulness and gratitude so as to be worthy to receive it. May we transform our unwholesome mental formations, especially our greed, and learn to eat with moderation. May we keep our compassion alive by eating in such a way that we reduce the suffering of all beings, preserve our planet, and reverse the process of global warming. May we accept this food so we can nurture our brotherhood and sisterhood, strengthen our community, and nourish our ideal of serving all beings. So in all this pondering about food and thinking about what I should talk about, I kept kind of coming back to the connection between food and relationships. And I think a lot of my stories have to do with relationships too. And I just kept, I couldn't avoid it. And I just feel like it's such an something that's so connected and so meaningful for me. And so the past couple of days as I was preparing for this talk, I just kept randomly coming upon these quotes about relationship. So I thought I'd also share some more quotes as well. There's a Blanche Hartman's Seeds from Compassion. I'm sure she mentions this all the time, but just the quote, "Our life depends on one another," is something that I've been sort of sitting with is sort of like a mantra for me is since I read that part of recently, I think it was in an article somewhere talking about her new book, it just seems so relevant to everything that I do and really full of generosity.
Would you say the same?
Our life depends on one another. And the other day I was, I'm in a like a 7 month long peer coaching program that's pretty much all through video chats and phone calls. But it happens to have my partner and it just happens to live in Chicago too, even though most other people are spread out throughout the country. And so just the other day we were trying to find a time to meet, and she mentioned that during her very short vacation, holiday vacation, she would like to come meet me at my place of work and volunteer. And I don't know, for some reason that like really took me aback. It was such a generous moment of like, she'd really been listening to some of the struggles that I've been talking about in the program. And, just that small moment was just very thoughtful and sweet. And I just feel so grateful for the relationships that I have, and the generosity of people. And then I guess not to keep saying quotes, maybe I'll just do one last quote. I was at a conference a couple months ago and Sister Simone was there. She is a Catholic nun and activist, she's a lawyer as well, and she said that once we begin to know each other's stories and histories, it's impossible to exclude another from our perspective. Which I don't think it's impossible. I exclude people all the time. I know their stories, and I push people away all the time. But I think the idea of it is very positive, of just how important relationships are to making change in this world, and the small moments that we have between each other are extremely meaningful. And some of those moments happen over food, so that's where that all kind of came from. So enough bad, and it's hard for me to talk for too long in a group setting before I stop working. So I'd love to hear if people have thoughts about some of the ramblings that I talked about here or any questions that I probably can't answer. So thank you for your attention.
Thank you very much, Katie, for your honesty and straightforwardness and sharing spirit. So comments, questions, responses for Katie, please feel free.
Katie, just because a lot of this talks sort of revolve around the way food and giving and sharing all that sort of connected to your work, and could you just say a little bit more about what your work actually is? I don't have
sure.
a very good sense of it. I know you've
I don't either.
More than mine. Give me what you
have. Sure, yeah. No, I just started a job, so it's all like, it doesn't make sense right now. But essentially, my job is to bring in-kind donations into a pantry. So it's
right.
a food pantry, donations
oh,
into
okay.
a food pantry.
So
food donations, hygiene, clothing, anything like that. So that means building relationships with grocery stores and other neighborhood partners and organizing food drives with all different entities and just building relationships with people. And there's a lot of generosity. But there's also a lot of difficulty in, too. We only have so much space in the location, so I have to say no a lot. So the giver, receiver, and gift thing is a big part of my job, I feel like. Does that help a little bit?
Yeah, I just didn't know quite how you...
Sure.
Other comments, please. Questions. David.
Thank you, Katie. It reminds me about how I eat. and some of the thought. Most of the time at work, I'm just... throwing a veggie burger in the microwave and zapping it and eating in 2 minutes and not thinking, you know, and getting back to work. And it's just about taking And I compare it to my experience at Seishin, because I find myself at Seishin now eating much slower, chewing, and not necessarily trying to eat so much, but just taking what is comfortable. But it also reminds me of when I lived in Japan. Before each meal, I would go eat itadakimasu, which means I humbly receive. And it is a humbleness. And it's a way of expressing gratitude that there's more to our food than just something on our plate. That there's a greater relationship. And afterwards saying, Gochi Sosama, that was a feast. Mm-hmm. You know, that was the thing. And it's a way of saying thank you to the person who prepared the food. You know, saying thank you very much for your giving. And I find that at Seishin, it's really nice to sit in the kitchen and help cook with, as I have had the privilege in the past, or to serve. It's very humbling and also very connecting. And how, like you say, you're trying to make it part of your practice in every day, every action, and how at work I just don't think of it at all. just eat. And yet the whole thing about it is to have consciousness to say thank you and to realize our sustenance, our very being, is dependent upon those. So thank you for that reminder.
In that spirit, I thank you, David, and also I appreciate it, Katie. You're talking about practicing with the limitations involved and seeing your own limitations involved in that interrelationship of giver, receiver, and gift. And that's really, in so many ways, the heart of practice, is to see, you know, how we each cannot fully, you know, take care of all the food deserts, or for, you know, as you referred to, for example, but just to be more aware. And you really expressed that very well. So thank you for your practice. Other questions or comments? Ken?
Thanks for your talk, Kitty, and your personal detail and everything. And the question that comes to me is, in terms of food drives, providing food for folks who don't have that, the nature of your job now, what's the, the attitude towards the folks who have to get the food? In other words, is this a step towards their empowerment, or is it, you know, something else? Or what's the context for that whole, act of giving there?
So if I understand you, you're asking about the experience of when they kind of come into the pantry to receive the food, what that experience is like?
Right. Yeah, the... how the folks are perceived, how they perceive themselves, and what is the next step for folks in terms of, do they just continuously receive food?
Sure.
Or is there, moving towards independence or what?
Yeah, so, I mean, asking for anything is very difficult, especially when one is struggling so much to meet their basic needs for whatever that reason is. So I would imagine it's quite a stigma to come into a food pantry and to ask for food. And sometimes some people who come in just do it one time. Sometimes they do it once in a while when their food stamps are not as much as they think they're going to be that time. It just depends. It's all across the board. But in terms of other sort of holistic view of it, I think it's lacking a bit. I think we offer, case management. I guess one might call it like clinical casework as well. There's somewhat of a therapeutic approach, but there's not a whole lot of sort of advocacy. There's a little bit, there's a little bit of education too, and part of my job is also doing presentations to people of all different ages, a lot of schools mostly, really, about just inequality. But generally speaking, there's not there's no sort of like path that someone has to be on. Mm-hmm. If they live in our geographical boundaries, they're welcome to come once a week for produce and once a month for the other staples. So, I mean, I think the livelihood that is an important thing of, you know, we offer really healthy options and choice options, and also flowers and things to remind ourselves of our humanity and things that are, you know, huge, kind of that will make someone smile at the very least. I mean, there's some relationship there, I think, but there's a lot of work to be done.
When you said that, it reminded me when I was in a service in San Diego. You get off of Ace and you go to, there'd be like a ministry place, and you go and get a little meal there, and then but then you kind of listen to a talk that went on for like half an hour. Or so it doesn't sound like,
yeah, it's not religious in any way. No.
Time for another question or comment, anyone? Hogetsu, as a former Tenzo who's worked with food and in the kitchen, do you have any reflections?
I guess one question I just had is, you read some piece in Living by Bao from Dogen, and I wondered where that was from.
I think it's from the Dharma of Taking Meals, but I could be wrong. I'm off
the actual fascicle.
I think so.
Mm-hmm. I thought about the three minds. Mm-hmm. In the attitude towards food, which is, you know, joyful mind. Mm. Big mind and grandmotherly mind, maybe, is the way to put it. Mm. You know, that there's a way to use just any activity, but in terms of food, of just really having it away